Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show, powered by the Beach Lifestyle Celebrity Segment. Remember, go to simplyg.com and wearethechallenge.com for more information, or totaltutor.net. And I'm just so honored to have on the program and celebrity, actor, much more, Exhibit, thanks for calling, man.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, I'm very excited, and for our listening audience that doesn't know who you are, because, I mean, everyone knows who Exhibit is, but specifically, you never know. You want to get a new generation of listeners to your music and things like that. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I've been a recording artist since 1996. I released my first single, Paparazzi, and it took me around the world. And, you know, from there, I started working with Dr. Dre and Eminem and Snoop Dogg and the rest of the family here in the West. And it's been an illustrious career. I started, doing television and cable TV. I started a show called Pimp My Ride that, broke all boundaries, and then it led to a movie career, and it's been a roller coaster of a ride, but, I've been able to spend, decades and continue to have a presence in entertainment. So that's basically where I came from.
Well, absolutely, and a tremendous story, and what you did in your whole career is fantastic, but then you did something that a lot of people don't do, is try to become an entrepreneur. Because, you're making all this money. You're the brand already. Why go through this? Have other people work for you, and meaning like in a way where I'm just going to collect money and save my money. But you decided to become an entrepreneur. And those are the most creative people in the world who create the brands, create everything. And through your creation of your brand, you said, you know what? I want to be an entrepreneur. So what made you want to become an entrepreneur?
I mean, I think, no one in my family has been considered a millionaire. I'm the first one that ever made $1 million in my family, and being, forward thinking and wanting to have, to educate myself, because I didn't go to college. I didn't have that background. So I wanted to be able to, support myself, legally first. And then I wanted to take advantage of, being, a young man and having a lot of opportunities happen in order to organize that and make sure that I'm reaping, the most benefit from those choices.
Well, absolutely. And I think that basically that's what happened. So what made you decide about this tequila brand? What made you want to do this as one of your entrepreneurial ventures?
Well, as bad as this sounds, I like to drink a lot. And when I tasted Bonita for the first time, it was basically, hands down the best tequila I've ever tasted. So, I look for opportunities that are on the ground level, that are starting from the bottom, and I like to be able to have an influence in the direction where that brand goes. I don't endorse and get behind a lot of things. So, when this opportunity came, it fit right into the luxury style branding that I'm accustomed to. And it was a perfect fit. So, when I got with Chris and Annette, and put our minds together, we came up with the idea of not only, endorsing it, but being a partner. And that's what's attractive to me at this stage in my career, is having ownership and having things that, not only I built, multi-million-dollar companies for other people, why not do it for myself?
And that's the key, because then when you're old and you have something that to have, to hang your hat on, that's something that, you're at one point, your music career, you'll be like, I don't want to travel all the time. But as an entrepreneur, you've created this. This is your baby, meaning you're the one helping make Bonita Platinum become what it needs to be. And that's the key component of this, right? That it's yours. It's not another company's making money off you.
Exactly.
So tell us specifically, so you discovered them and you liked their tequila. What happened from there? It's like, basically, I gotta talk to these people. How did this, tell us the story.
Well, basically, you know, the story happened like this. Chris saw me with a music video that I had produced, called What It Is. And in the video, I'm, you know, throwing, you know, drinking bottles of Patron, throwing, it's like tequila everywhere. And so he said, you know what, you know, he must like tequila. So he sent me, you know, a case. And from there, you know, we started conversations. We, you know, we had a couple meetings. And that's basically how it happened. It's, you know, it was no secret to the formula. It's just how, that's how it came together.
A lot of times artists connect with businesses and then it becomes a win-win relationship. And you said, this is a win-win for me. That's what that sounds
like. This is a win-win. Yep.
So you went from there with the brand, and then you came up with some ideas yourself in this marketing after you became a partner and wanted to endorse it. Is that, should that change?
Yeah.
So tell us specifically some of the ideas you had.
Well, basically, you know, I have a built-in audience that comes from the music side of things and also from the television side of things. But, you know, there's creative marketing that goes in, you know, both sides. You know, our bottle is beautiful, but, you know, we want to showcase the bottle as the product and make sure that people understand what's inside the bottle is the most important. And my audience is being brought to it. So we don't want to put a bad taste in anybody's mouth that may not be familiar with, you know, the music side of things. So it's a fine line that we have to walk. But the creative marketing that comes from, you know, our guys on the Bonita Platinum team are spectacular, ranging from our events that we throw all the way through to, you know, our print ads and the way the photos and our look and the way we even package our products has changed over the last 3 months. So, you know, we take very, very aggressive steps to make sure that our perception and the way that we put our product into the market is above and beyond. It's beyond perfection.
So then, I guess, through that process, especially you being someone who tours Exhibit, you're like, you know what? Why don't we go on a tour? Because that's where, I guess, the whole world can learn about your brand. So tell us what's going on with the whole tour, the whole promotion tour.
Well, what we do is every time we solidify distribution in a market, we go into that market about 45 days after initial shipment. From there, we find, you know, the movers and shakers. We find brand ambassadors. We bring people in that are going to help us, you know, when we're not present in the market. And that's what we do. You know, once we solidify distribution, I fly out. You know, we throw an event. It works out perfect.
That's really cool. And when's your next events coming up? What city are you going to next?
Well, we get all kinds of, you know, we get all kinds of news every day because we have, you know, we're constantly getting new cities, new states, new distribution. So it's hard for me to say unless I have my calendar right in front of me where I'm going next.
Because you're traveling with your music and trying to coordinate both of those things, that's a challenge sometimes.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so what do you think, since you've been an entrepreneur, what has been the biggest challenge you've had to overcome, I guess, in being in this partnership and things like that? What challenges have you had to try to overcome so that you can make this brand the best tequila in the world?
Well, I mean, there definitely is a lot of competition, but I believe in the same breath, there is no competition because no one is approaching, you know, our tequila process the way we have here. So I think all we have to do is stay consistent. If we stay consistent and push, you know, and make ourselves known in the marketplace and make smart moves and, you know, don't get ahead of ourselves, I think we'll be fine. I think we're going to set a pace that is going to far surpass our initial expectations, and then we'll go forward from there and see what happens.
And it sounds like it, and I think that's your ultimate goal. So what's your ultimate goal with this company? Where do you want to see it in the next 5 years?
I mean, where don't I want to see it? I want to see it everywhere. I want to be able to turn around and not only do charitable events and, you know, use the equity in a manner that I see fit, but I want to be able to, you know, endorse, you know, other people, you know, get into endorsing things and building our brand that way. You know, maybe sponsor a car or in NASCAR or do something that is on a larger scale campaign or sponsor a tour or sponsor an arena. The sky's the limit. I believe that we can get as big as we desire to be.
So are you looking at also any charitable organizations you're looking to partner with some of the sales? You were talking about that. Do you have any ideas yet of who you'd like to help?
Yeah, we have something already in place. We have something for our breast cancer survivors, and it's a campaign coming out that maybe Shay after the interview can chime in and let her know about. But there's a very good, you know, initial campaign that we have for breast cancer coming up with our bottle involved as well.
Well, my business partner and I, we team up with other foundations to try to help them out in certain ways. So hopefully we can be part of this. So I'll make sure to get in touch with Shay and try to get this done because G's traveling. He does live in L.A., my co-host, and he lives in downtown L.A. in one of the nice apartments, and he would definitely love to be involved to help in this process to promote the event. So I will make sure to reach out to both Shay and G, and we'll make sure that we can get something going so that we continue this and have it as a regular update where you're promoting and where you're going with this. But I like the idea that you're putting a charitable part of this. It's not constantly about, okay, I'm going to fill my pockets. I want it to be a successful brand, but I also want to give back. Isn't that correct?
Definitely. That's always been in the portfolio for me.
And has breast cancer been the big thing you've always done, or what other foundations have you worked with in your career?
Well, I mean, I've done things where I've built homes for, you know, wounded warriors in the San Antonio area. You know, it's not about pinpointing, you know, what I've done. It's just always being there and being accessible no matter what. You know, I there's no limit to the things I've done, you know, throughout my career. You know, I work and then get in where I can, but, you know, I like to put my money where my mouth is. You know, this is an opportunity that I see is going to be, you know, something that is going to be, it's going to be everlasting, you know, and forward as far as getting everybody together and pulling our families together and making sure we have a future. I also want to spread that wealth to be able to, you know, do things for people in need.
Okay, the last question I have is specifically about the music. What's going on with your music right now?
I just released an album called Napalm last October. We're getting ready to continue the Collateral Damage tour in support of the album. We did a short U.S. run, and now we're about to go do, you know, in combination with the Gumball 3000. We'll be out in Europe. We'll do some dates correlated with that, and then we'll just put out a new album probably end of this year.
Fantastic. And so you still love doing your music. Are you doing any acting right now, or is it just pretty much just music right now?
Man, I'm doing music and I'm doing Bonita. So once I settle down and get some time, then I'll definitely get back into the movies.
Well, it's a situation where how do you have enough time? It seems like you're busy constantly. So I appreciate you taking time to come on the show, X. Where can we find more information on you? And people can purchase the tequila in the cities that are available in the website and much, much more. Where can we find that info?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can go to bonitaspirits.com, and it'll give you all of our latest updates. You can join our inner circle, and, you know, you can be up to the date and see exactly what we're doing with Bonita. Then you can also go to exhibit.com or go to my Twitter page. It is Twitter/exhibit/Facebook, all of that the same, XCIBIT.
All right. Well, it was an awesome conversation. Love to have you back on again, especially to promote the big event involving breast cancer and to promote your brand some more and your music. So I'll stay in touch with your publicist so we can make this a regular thing. And I hope that maybe you'll get an opportunity to connect with GJ in L.A. So I'll try to get all that set up. So thanks for calling, man.
All right. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care now.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Okay. Bye-bye. You're listening to the Toll Education Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Toll Education Celebrity Show on the Toll Education Network, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook. And I'm really excited to welcome the program. I'm just really honored to have on the program Shelly Morrison from Will and Grace and her husband, Walter Dominguez. Guys, thanks for calling.
You are welcome. It's a pleasure to be on.
Did you have a chance to see the film?
I did not get the chance, so I'm going to ask it like in the way, the basically to find out his passion and things like that. I am a very, very busy person. I own a tutoring and consulting company, talk show, plus also I'm a social media expert. So I am just swamped. I do about 20 interviews a week, Shelley.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So we're all interviewing celebrities and different people all together. So, Shelly, tell us specifically what made Walter so passionate about this Weaving the Past, then we'll go right to Walter.
After 9/11, I think it affected everybody in a very, very strong way. And Walter felt it a lot. I was going through cancer surgeries. He needed to reconnect, and he remembered his beloved grandfather, and he wanted to find out more about his grandfather. And that started the ball rolling, and also he wanted to interview members of the family to find out the history. Well, one thing led to another, and it took on a life of its own. And my husband has done this extraordinary film that's a gift to our family and also a gift to everyone else. It's a hopeful film. People come out wanting to find out about their own families. There's history. There's a story. My husband's an extraordinary person, and I executive produced, and I did help somewhat in the framing of the film. My main objective was for the film to capture Walter's essence. Animals and children just gravitate towards him. And once you have the people seeing that, you can take them anywhere. You can take them on the journey with you. And it captures his essence. And so we're really proud of this film.
Well, I can see how proud you are, and it's kind of, I guess, very strange you mentioned 9/11, Shelley, after yesterday. I mean,
yes, isn't it?
And how that, Walter, got you to do the documentary Weaving the Past based on 9/11, and yesterday was just so horrific, Walter. Ah,
it really was. It brought it all back. We have our adopted son and daughter who were in New York City that morning of 9/11, and they witnessed the towers falling. And yesterday's news from Boston really, we called them right away to see how they were, because we knew it would, re-stimulate that whole horrible event. And, of course, for the folks in Boston and all around the country, it's terrifying, and it's very, very sad.
But we cannot give up hope. We just cannot. And we can't keep watching the media. We can't, the news, the television. It's becoming violence porn.
We can watch it. It's just we have to edit what, there's only so much of that you want to absorb into your system of the horror. But look at the things that are positive. Instead, all the people coming to the rescue.
Oh, it was so heroic.
Yeah, I mean, that's the hopeful part.
I agree. I absolutely agree. And, like I said, the way we were able to come together as a nation in so many ways, and hopefully through this process and finding out who did this, that we have to know that we're not safe yet. We cannot say terrorism is dead. Because
exactly, and we all have to have a responsibility. The people who are making films, who are doing video games, we have to, we can't, for my entire career, and I started acting in 1958, so I'm an old broad, I never would accept a part, ever, that would do damage to someone.
That's great.
That would, create some kind of horrible image for them.
If it could be that whoever set this off is, it could be an American, just a person who's just crazy and with a grudge of some kind and some crazy kind of a thing, and we just don't know yet. But in any case, we need to spread, you know, we need to spread good thoughts and good feelings and to help to counteract the horror of what's going on. And we know that this isn't going to end. There'll always be people who are have bad intentions, who are just plain crazy. And we live in a society where we don't want to jail ourselves and live in self-contained prisons where we, you know, we want to be out among people and celebrate. And so, unfortunately, this is part of the...
Our film is very hopeful. It's Walter's grandfather having a very difficult childhood in Mexico and having a very difficult time being one of the early revolutionaries, the journalists.
Society in Mexico 100 years ago had deteriorated to the point where people were living in desperation by the millions, and only 400 families were getting everything. And it just got to the point where the misery level was so high, and the fear was so high, and the anxiety that something had to happen. But
the thing that about it was that what his grandfather, how his grandfather became one of the most incredible human beings, this incredible minister, this incredible pastor with an incredible sense of humor, and the lives that he touched,
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so that's really what the film is. It takes you on a journey of following my journey, but in that process, I weave in family, people that I met, people I didn't even know existed, and history, because you can't really understand your ancestors, what they went through 100, 150 years ago, without understanding their times and what they were living with. Just as in the future, our descendants will look back and wonder what it was like for us. In order to understand the way we behaved, the way we responded, they're going to have to understand the kind of society we lived in and the times we lived in. So that's what the film tries to do. It tries to place my grandfather's early life, his childhood and his youth, in those times and make it comprehensible, entertaining. I mean, we try to make it as vivid and as interesting and alive as possible. And I think we have achieved that because our audiences who've seen the film have come away really just feeling not only very moved, but left with something to think about, feelings to feel, and wanting to go on their own journeys to learn about their own ancestors and take a journey for themselves into their own pasts.
It's across the board. Older people, teenagers, our niece and nephew, the twins, they're 17. After they saw it, they stayed up all night with their mother, Walter's sister, asking her questions, talking about it.
Oh, wow.
You know, how many movies the kids go to today where they want to sit up all night and talk about it?
Exactly. So I guess it's tracing back not a long period of time, but yet a lot of research had to be done, Walter, to make this the way you wanted it, right? Especially.
Yeah, it's a great deal of research. It took years, and I had to travel all through the Southwest and California and into Mexico and look for people that I didn't even had no connection with. But one thing led to another. One person led me to the next. And through some miracles, actually did end up connecting with my grandfather's long-lost family. He never saw his mother again after the age of five when he ran away from home or was sent away. We're not completely sure, but... he had a very difficult childhood as a result, but he always wanted to reconnect with his family. It was a dying wish, and my mother and my father made a vow to try to fulfill it, and then they couldn't do it, so it fell on me to try to fulfill that vow, and finally was able to do it.
I think that's great. I think that, Walter, it shows your true passion for your grandfather and looking at, you know, this is something I want to know more about, especially with looking at that tragedy in so many ways and saying, well, we have to remember about people's lives. We can't forget when they die, especially if they were able to plant something so important. I think one thing I want to do when I know that when my time comes, it could be tomorrow, it could be in 50, 60 years or 70 years, that I want to be able to leave a legacy in certain ways. And it could be a very small one through the little things I do each day and being polite to others, even when they're not nice to me, and doing great things and small things. But that's what comes back.
You're absolutely right. That's it in a nutshell. You've said it really clearly, really well, and that's the message of the film, and that's the message that I hope we can, all of us, yourself, ourselves, can continue to put out to people, is that, you know, we have to light our candles. We have to live our lives. Just, my grandfather was a person who smiled every day, and he made friends with everybody. He spread kindness in simple ways, not just big ways, as you say. It's the small things that often matter more than the big things.
The little things, as yeah. the little flower, the saint, Saint Therese said about the little things of each day, doing the small things,
yes.
the, you know, holding the door for somebody, picking up a piece of paper, smiling. The smile yeah. is one of the hardest things in the world, Shelley. Saying something nice to somebody and
yeah.
to have patience for people. That,
exactly.
Well, I'm from the Bronx, so I make people laugh.
Well, and Shelley, again, the background being involved in this, it just must have been one of your favorite projects ever, right, to be involved with Walter in this.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, in August, we'll be married 40 years.
Oh, congratulations.
And in Hollywood, that's 150. But I wasn't with him in the beginning because I was doing Will and Grace. And came on board really in earnest about, what, honey, about 2-3 years ago? 2 years ago?
Yes.
And
it was always there supportive. And, I mean, it wouldn't have been possible to do all of this without, you know, without your partner, your wife or your husband backing you up and being spiritually and morally and emotionally supportive, you know, and practically, too. So, you know, she's always been there backing me up. But more actively in the last 2 years, she's had more time now. And also in the editing, I had almost 400 hours of footage to go through. It took a couple of years just to sort everything out and to cut things down. And my first cut was a 4-hour film, which, of course, we all knew was insanely too long. But that's not unusual for documentaries. You have to keep paring things down until you find what the storyline, the essence is. And Shelley was very, very helpful with me on that aspect in particular, with helping me focus in on what really is the spine of the story. What are the key things and get down to the essence of things.
So what's your ultimate goal with this film? Where do you want, go ahead.
The audience to find it. It's a grassroots thing. We put our own money into this. It's you know, we own our house. We don't owe any money. We don't go on cruises. I'm low maintenance. The film is something that we're proud of. And so we don't want to just, you know, shove it in a theater, make a buck and leave. We hope to, hopefully do some festivals, a grassroots movement. And if by the end of October it looks like it's still going to be, you know, a hard sell, we don't have a huge budget for publicity. We don't have a huge budget for a lot of things. But what we're doing is on May 18th, we're hosting a screening at one of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences theaters in Hollywood. And we're inviting celebrities, and all ticket sales will go to the Museum of Social Justice that Walter and I are on the board. He's the president of the board. We're trying to create a Museum of Social Justice. We've been in operation for about a year and a half,
oh.
And to bring awareness to this, because it's linked. It's linked. And so we're working feverishly right now. We're going to have a reception. It's going to be wonderful. People can go to our website if they're in Los Angeles, weavingthepast.com, and they can get information about the tickets. They can find out more about us. They can see a trailer. They can do the whole nine yards.
If they go to the museum website, they can go directly to the Eventbrite page where they can order tickets, and that's www.museumofsocialjustice.org.
Well,
and so they can order tickets there if they'd like to come. We'd love to have them.
Well, Walter, we have to have you back on the program just to promote the event next month. I'll make sure I contact your publicist, and we'll get that done before this event to promote it and have a conversation with both of you again about this, because I think that what makes this film special is, again, to honor someone's life, to see the how he was able to make such a difference for certain people, and for people to remember. and understand that every life is precious and that every life changes so many people in so many ways, and you don't have to be extraordinary.
Right.
Ordinary people can make a difference in this world, and we saw it in Boston yesterday. We saw
yeah.
it how everyone worked together for
yes.
for what that thing, what happened. And I think you saw the same thing in 9/11, and I really appreciate it again. So quickly again, Walter, the website to find out information on the film.
www.museumofsocialjusticedestice.org.
And Shelley, thanks again. I tell you, you are a very, very heartfelt person who really cares for others, and Walter as well. So I really enjoyed having the conversation with you guys. Love to have you back next month. So take care now.
It's been a pleasure.
All right,
bye-bye.
Take care. Okay. You listen to Total Education Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Spotlight Show's celebrity segment, TotalTutor.net, for more information. I'm really excited to welcome the program. Somebody will be coming to Pittsburgh May 2nd through 4th, and I've never had a comedian on the show, and he won Last Comic Standing back in 2006, and he has a very, very interesting story, and I'm looking forward to talking to him, so I'm welcoming the program, celebrity Josh Blue. Josh, thanks for calling.
Well, thanks for having me, man.
All right, so Josh, I guess that the story of you going to Last Comic, to winning Last Comic Standing, it was a process to becoming a successful comedian. So tell me how it basically started when you wanted to decide that, hey, I want to be a comedian.
Yeah, I mean, I started in college, and you know, obviously, I'd like to mention this early in the radio interview that I have cerebral palsy. Otherwise, your listeners are just sitting at home going, man, this guy is wasted. but I, you know, throughout my whole life, people told me I was funny, and basically, I started doing open mic nights in college, and it was all downhill from there, really.
Wow. So it's very, very interesting. So to be able to overcome that at an early age, let's go to school, if you don't mind, Josh, and specifically growing sure. up at school, having CP and be able to handle things and handle kids and handle certain situations, I guess comedy was the way to kind of break the ice, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a great way to get people on your side. As you know, kids can be very cruel, but I was a kid, so I could be cruel back, you know. That's the great thing about comedy, is that it's such a relief of tension, you know, when, you know, I'm obviously moved differently than other people, but it doesn't mean that my brain doesn't fire off just as fast, it's got faster, and it definitely was a great defense mechanism growing up, and still to this day, you know.
And
I've weaseled my way out of a lot of trouble being funny.
So where would you say that you got that funniness from? Do you have some favorite comedians growing up?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when you're younger, it's like Bill Cosby was the first, and then as I got older, you know, Richard Pryor and Eddie Murphy were just huge influences, and I don't know if you know who Mitch Hedberg was, but he's a huge influence on my career as well.
And what did your parents think of the fact that you wanted to be a comedian? Because I know that they sheltered you in certain things in life and dealt with certain things in life based on your disability. But you were
sure.
able to overcome that. And I tell you, that's a great story. And I'm sure that's where we're going to get to the whole Last Comic Standing, because you're a true witness in so many ways for children and adults with CP that they can become successful.
Yeah, my parents, you know, they're always going to be a little disappointed. They wanted me to be a brain surgeon, but no, I'm just kidding. No, they're super, super supportive, you know. My mom told me at a young age that she always thought that I was going to do something in entertainment. And, you know, just the fact that I've been able to talk about my disability and put them in the limelight and, you know, help educate people about disabilities. That's the thing about my show is, you know, whether you know it or not, when you leave my show, obviously you leave entertained, but you also leave with a different perspective of disability and disabled people. And usually you're more afraid of us. But
Well, I'm hoping I get to see you in Pittsburgh, so I'll definitely reach out to your publicist and say, hey, I'm right in Pittsburgh. We'll bring a crew of people to cheer you on and listen. I've not been to I don't think I've ever been to a comic show, so it'll be quite interesting. And it's just something, I guess, I don't know, something that'll be cool to experience. I've been in sporting events, all different things. But Josh, okay, so you were growing up, you were a comedian. You were doing these things. Then you said, I'm going to do Last Comic Standing. I'm sure that your friends and relatives are like, are you crazy? Right? I'm sure they were thinking, really?
Yeah, you know, I actually auditioned twice. I went the year before I won. I went to Chicago, and you know, the whole process of waiting in line.
Yes.
6 hours, and it was like -15 below, and it was insane. And then I'd get in there, barely thought out, and you get 2 minutes, and I got up there, I was about a minute through the thing, and they're like, thank you, next. And, you know, that was pretty heartbreaking after, you know, flying all the way to Chicago, waiting in line. But, you know, there were thousands of people that had broken hearts that day, and I was kind of discouraged. But then when it came up again next year, you know, my agent encouraged me to try again, and I'm sure glad I did, because I ended up winning the whole thing.
And congratulations about that. And I guess the process, how about when you were in this and you're competing against other people? People thought, there's no way Josh is going to win, right? You were an underdog from the beginning, weren't you?
Well, you know, it's crazy, man, that a lot of people picked me from the beginning. And I went into it like I was going to win. I had that mentality. Like, you know, I think when you go to win something, you have to have that frame of mind that you're going to win. And I think after I performed a few times, my competition knew that I was going to win too. You know, they always joke with me like, "Well, we're just fighting for second here."
Right, and I think that once winning it, did that help take off your career so that it could become a living for you? Did that really?
Oh man!
Okay.
Yeah, it blew the doors off my career, man. I work, 200-plus shows a year.
Wow.
Okay. Travel all over the world doing comedy, and it's an amazing ride. And again, it goes back to what's really cool is it helps educate people about disability without beating you over the head with it. You know, you don't feel bad for me. You just kind of get my perspective.
Did you ever think of having a foundation involving your disability to raise money?
Yeah, awareness, and well, I'm definitely working on that now. It's a process of figuring out the right. There are so many foundations out there; it's hard to not step on someone else's toes.
Right. So I would love to help you. My business partner, who could not make the interview today, Simply G from SimplyG.com. His name's GJ Reynolds, and he's the playful and powerful warrior, but he also is part of Mission G. It's a foundation helping others. So we need to maybe get on a call at one point in time and talk about a process, figuring out where, because as an entrepreneur, he knows about starting a foundation and figuring out, because Josh, you would be a tremendous, bring awareness to any disability. I think that finding an organization that highlights all disabilities, what a perfect situation because of what you were able to overcome. So I think we'll definitely have to reach out in that way and see how he can help you. And we'll keep that. Maybe when we meet in May in Pittsburgh, we can have that dialogue.
Yeah, it'd be great. You should come out. I mean, definitely come to the show, but bring your business partner and we'll figure it out.
Oh, absolutely. We'll try to do that. If worst case scenario, we'll get on a call. He's out in L.A., so I'm sure you travel all over the place. So we'll definitely do it. I understand that we're going to talk a little bit about Ron White's Salute to the Troops, but you've been on a lot of big-time comedy things. You have to educate me because I have no idea. What are the big gigs like for TV and stuff? Have you worked with some really big-time comics since winning Last Comic Standing?
Yeah, man. I mean, the door, like I said, the door flew off my career. I've gotten to work with a lot of my idols. I just did that Ron White Salute to the Troops. And, I mean, that was a whole all-star lineup there. It was a bunch of my favorite comics were on the bill with me. And, you know, that's always a trip when you realize that you're on the bill with your favorite comics. like, oh man, I'm this is a big deal. And the fact that it was, you know, supporting the troops and wounded warriors, and I just think it's so cool that I'm able to help any way I can, because obviously I'm not going to war. You don't want me on the...
And I think that it's felt really good. And I think that's what's motivating you now to say, I need to start a foundation at one point in time, because what I was able to do helping raise money for the troops, you want to continue to do this, right? You say, this is something,
yeah.
You know, I'm traveling 200 days a year, but I want to do something that really is going to transform people's lives.
You know, I also have a family and two kids here. And, you know, having kids made me realize the importance of education and creating awareness of disability. And you know, I don't, you know, even to this day, I still deal with bullies and people making fun of me. But that's what's great about my position, is I'm actually in a spot in my life where I'm able to stand up for myself and other people that aren't necessarily able to, you know, let it run off their back like I am, you know. If you make fun of me, I just laugh at it and take it to the stage, you know. But other people aren't so fortunate to have that sort of frame of mind.
And for raising money for the troops, you learned a lot about specifically that foundation and what they do with wounded warriors. It's tremendous, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's spectacular, and it's so needed. And you know what I found, too, is when you perform for troops, they're the most receptive audience you can have. They're just so grateful that you're donating your time and you're taking time. Because what they do is, I mean, you can't repay that in any other way. You know what I mean? That's a big sacrifice you're doing. And if I can bring a little humor into their day-to-day life, then that feels really good.
Well, it sounds like it feels good and makes you very, very happy. I have a couple other questions about comedy, and then I want to go about what your plans are in this career of yours. So have you done some TV as well? I know you've done a lot of TV shows as stand-up, but have you gotten the opportunity to appear as an actor in anything in either television or movies since winning
Oscar? Yeah, I've done a little bit here and there. You know, it's again, one of those things that people need the education on. Because the problem is, no matter how good of an actor I am, I can't unact having cerebral palsy.
Right.
So a lot of times people won't see past the palsy and see the humor side or the actor that I am. It's hard for the casting agents to go, well, it doesn't say the character has cerebral palsy, but we could add it, you know what I mean? If I was the right character. That's been a big struggle in my acting career, just that a lot of times this business is very closed-minded to deviating from the past.
But as we see on all the different channels in comedy, there's a comedy channel and there's other places that highlight comedians all the time. There's enough work for you, so you can continue to stay in your craft if you're working 200 days a year. That's pretty good. So
sure.
That's
yeah. I mean, I have a half-hour special on Comedy Central and an hour special on Showtime. So yeah, I mean, definitely my comedy career is quite good. But I would definitely love to do more movies and acting.
Well, I think there should be a story about you. Honestly, I think that somebody should someday write a story about you. Or you got to write a book. You got to write a book.
I'm writing a book right now. It's called The Palsy Punch. And hopefully that will be done by this year. And I'm also, we're doing a documentary about me.
Well, cool.
Yeah, so it's exciting. That's in the early stages. But I'm excited to show people the other side of me and, you know, me being a parent and me being, you know, a husband and a world traveler and, you know, I speak three different languages. And
Oh, my gosh, wow, yeah.
I played soccer on the Paralympic national team for 8 years and went to 8 different countries playing soccer. And, yeah, so I've had a lot of crazy crazy times in my life, and it's definitely time to start documenting it.
Well, most definitely, and I tell you, I think your career is going to continue to take off. I didn't know all about this because I'm not a comedian fan, and I know my producer must know who you are because my producer's younger than me. I'm 40, Josh, but he's in his 20s, and when he books people, he says, don't worry, this guy's awesome. I said, well, I love the story, just education background with you. After reading your, I'm just like amazed, and I'm so glad you were able to come on the show, and I hope we get to meet in Pittsburgh, so I'm going to make sure that my producer sends out an email to your publicist to make sure that I can get some tickets for my wife and I so we can go out and see you when you're in Pittsburgh. So let's hopefully connect.
Yeah, we definitely gotta hang out afterward and chat about foundations and stuff too.
Absolutely. So where can our listeners find information on you and learn more about you, Josh?
Dustlu.com, and I'm also on Facebook with it's Josh Lu fan page. And I'm on Twitter as well, which is Josh Lu Comedy.
Well, Josh,
and from the YouTube as well. If you YouTube my name, there's hundreds of clips in there as well.
I'm sure you're a rock star in this, man, and I had no idea. And I'm so honored that we could maybe connect and be able to hang out after the show. So I appreciate you calling, and good luck to you. And we're going to definitely have you on a regular basis, especially when your book's out, to have you come back on to talk about the book and talk about your documentary. So thanks again for calling, Josh, and taking the time on your busy schedule.
My pleasure. I'll see you in Pittsburgh.
All right. See you in Pittsburgh, Josh. Take care. Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. You're listening to the Total Education Spotlight Show, powered by the celebrity segment Beach Lifestyle. And we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net, for more information. And I'm really excited to bring back to the program, and I guess a regular monthly guest. And that's one thing that the Total Education Network's trying to do, is take celebrities who are great guys or gals and help promote their brand and give them an update so they have a place, a platform, and a forum to talk. So I want to welcome the program, Tim Holmes from Oz, the Great and Powerful Oz. Tim, thanks for calling, man.
A pleasure, man. Thanks for having me again, Neil.
Oh, I'm excited. And I guess before we were talking, you were just so real. Could not wait to the release of the film. And then I guess you're really excited to know how well it did in the box office for so long, right?
Yeah, it did amazing. We were, number one for, I think, 2 or 3 weeks. We're still on the list. We're still pumping out some numbers, still getting people coming to see it. So it's been good. It's been the biggest movie this year so far. Which is a good thing, because you never know what's going to happen. You could get a bomb, a John Carter. You don't know. But I had faith in it, because I knew everyone could relate to the Wizard of Oz movie, because we've all seen that growing up as kids.
Right.
So why would you see it again? As opposed to John Carter, which was a tentpole film like ours, a tentpole film is what they call it. John Carter starting from nowhere. There's no background. There's no history involved in John Carter. Who knows what John Carter's about? So I knew it was going to be a big film, and I'm glad it turned out the way it did.
Well, absolutely. I think it's exciting to see that and to do so well at the box office. And yet, it's kind of funny when you look at the box office and then look at the people who review it. I guess the most important thing is it needs to make money, right? That, especially you being a filmmaker as well. Money.
I mean, that's the bottom line. And most filmmakers I know is like, we don't read the reviews, because most people who review films are people who wanted to make films but couldn't do it or didn't do it, but now they're going to review it. So don't listen to them, because they're there for conflict, because conflict creates readers. So if they like every film that comes across their pages, why are you going to listen to them? It's like Simon Cowell. He's not interesting if you're like, oh, my God, that was an amazing singer. You're going to the final. You said that to everybody. It'd be boring. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
There's no interest.
Exactly. Okay, so tell us specifically what happened when you were out in L.A. about the red carpet and all that. How fun was that with the premiere and all that? You went to the red carpet. Yeah.
That was amazing and nervous to walk that red carpet. It was cool. It was a 45 minute to an hour walk to get down the red carpet, but it's actually the yellow brick road they had laid out for us, which is cool. And, you sit there and you pull through your picture, and then you have a publicist with you, and she's telling everybody who you are with a big 8x10 cue card that has your name on it, a picture, who you are, what your character is. So the photographers shoot that cue card the publicist gives them, and they shoot you. And then you go down, and she goes up to people who are, like, entertainment and the talk shows and say, hey, I got the strong man here, Tim Holmes. Bada bing, bada boom. You want to interview him? Then you do your interview, and then you keep going down and down and down and down and down. And one thing I learned by talking to some other actors, I talked to a couple of directors and big actors and said, hey, man, any tips you can give me? They go, well, first thing I would do is, because you're nobody, is you better get there first, because if you walk down that line with James Franco behind you, you're going to get shooed out the way, buddy. So get there first, be on time, brother, and get down that yellow carpet so people can get your pitch in and you can talk to you. Otherwise, you're going to get kicked out of the way by the big A-list people. I'm like, all right, fellas on it. So that was cool, man. That was cool.
So that was good advice. You're a nobody. Well, someday, Tim, that won't be the case, as you're a really motivated actor. But I guess compared to, you're right. And at one point, he was a nobody as well. So you got to always remember those situations. So when you went down the red carpet, you got a lot of good photo ops and you got some interesting interviews. Who did you get interviewed by on the red carpet?
I got interviewed by a lot of Chinese stations.
Really?
In China. Yeah, which is cool because they released Oz over in China, and there's not a lot of films get released in China, but we got accepted and released, which is a great market, a huge market. It's second to U.S., by the way, China.
Oh, wow.
It feels, yeah. So that was good. Had some entertainment, that stuff, but they didn't use any of my footage, so is what it is when you're nobody.
So the stuff that aired was China then, right?
Yeah, China had some other online stuff and some bits here and some bits there. So it was cool. The photos were cool. They use those like on online, on the IMDb stuff and for the Getty images. So, you know, it's just press. But probably the best thing that comes out of a red carpet event is you walk down the red carpet. They don't really know who you are. Everybody goes in the theater and everybody gets to see the movie for the first time. It's the whole crew, the lead crew members, the lead cast members, and you know, the producers, and these are heavy producers here, you know, Joe Roth, and just giants in the industry. So they get to see you for the first time on this big screen in an audience setting environment, as opposed to the private little screenings. So they get the reaction from the crowd and stuff. So it was a great experience. Afterwards, like, man, good job, Tim. You did really good, man. Hey, you know, we got some other stuff we're working on. We want to talk to you about that, so we're going to reach out to you. So I had Sam Raimi's brother, Ted Raimi, at the After Hours Party. Says, man, good job. I really like what you did. I'm shooting a film in Michigan this summer. I want you in it. So save some time. So we'll be talking to him, get me on the schedule to shoot that film with him. And then from now, my agent, we get scripts, you know, sent to us and offers sent to us, and we're just trying to pick the right project for the next thing to do. You know, you kind of pick good projects now at this point because you can. I mean, in 10 years, of course, I'll probably get around a TV show, but now I'm into a good project, you know what I'm saying?
Yes,
and,
yes.
And find that ladder, man, and get to it. So the next thing I do has to be equal to, you know, screen time and lines that I did in Oz, equal to, if not greater, than what I did before. So don't go backwards, try to go forward. And, I mean, I'm not, in my point in my career, I'm not doing this to make a living, to pay my bills. I do this because I love it. It's an art, so I don't need to take every job or every offer that comes in my way because I'm a struggling actor trying to survive, which is very fortunate. So I always tell that to other actors and filmmakers, man, have a backup plan. You better have a rich wife or a family, or get yourself a side business that's going to pay your bills, because this is art. Art doesn't pay.
And that's true. And I see that in radio, Tim. I'm not making any money doing this radio show, but it leads connections and money. That's the thing. Again, it's influence. Being a star, unless you're the biggest star, it leads to influence and leads to opportunity. So I'm sure when you're talking, talking your business up to different people and you tell them, oh, by the way, I'm an actor as well, that leads to a conversation that you might never have had, right?
Yeah, exactly. It sure does. Yeah, it opens doors for all kinds of things. It's great.
Exactly. Or a lot of free drinks at a bar, right?
Definitely. There's been a lot of free drinks. It's crazy. Like, sweet. I don't have to pay for that? Awesome.
Yeah, you'll learn more and more of that, especially different events. Or, yeah, we'll get you that dinner. Or, yeah, you're here that. So what about after the film premiere? Because people are like, who the heck's this guy walking around, this bald guy? I don't know who he is. Then once the film happens, how much do you get recognized now?
It's crazy, man. Every day. Isn't that weird? Every day. And I've had a lot of press in my hometown. So I definitely get recognized every day when I'm back in Michigan. Out in Hollywood, I mostly get recognized by other actors and what have you at the gym and stuff like that, or in acting classes, or when I'm on auditions.
But Michigan, you're recognized by everyone. That's great.
Yeah, because I do like the local news stations here and the local newspapers. And, you know, it's a small town, man, and everybody pretty much knows everybody gets around. So it's cool, man. I like it. I mean, you know, I want... I don't know why people would get offended by being recognized. It's weird to hear about that.
No, the paparazzi's after you, Tim. They you know, that's the thing.
I don't know if paparazzi would come after me, man. I'm probably kind of scary. He might rip head off, man. I might flip his car over on him.
Exactly. But think about this. In a lot of ways, a lot of people want the celebrity status, but once they get it, then they don't know what to do with it. And they don't. They want people out of their private lives, and it's just not going to happen. I mean, the thing, Tim,
if that's your biggest problem because the paparazzi bugs you, you know, dude, I was in the fire department, man. I almost died working at my job. I got shot at responding to, you know, told three calls for shootings, and I got shot at by the opposing gang members who didn't want you to rescue the gang member that just shot. Dude, if the biggest word you got about it is, oh, they're taking my picture, leave me alone. Dude, suck it up. Go dig some potholes or build a house for a living or do a labor job. Because acting is so, it's obviously the easiest job I've ever had. I mean, I've been firing. Well, it wasn't easy as when I worked for Chippendales back in the 80s.
Oh my gosh, we're getting into a lot of stuff tonight, Tim. But really, no, I mean, I agree. I mean, the thing is with the paparazzi and being recognized, I think what you need to do now is capitalize in your area to go to different events that are things. You have to find out what you can do to represent the strongman at different things. You could be at everywhere. Yeah. You could be doing parades and everything. I just don't know what you're allowed to do or not do. And that's where you signed the contract as an unknown. Are you able to capitalize off the Oz brand? And that's what you have to find out.
Yeah, you're right. This is true.
Because that's the key. And then, but also Vegas is doing well for you, right? You did another role with Vegas, and you're hoping that's going to become a recurring role, right?
Yeah, that'd be nice, but I think Vegas is going to, I don't know, man. They shifted it from Tuesday at 10 p.m. to Friday at 9 p.m. The numbers went from $5 million a show to $1 million a show. Friday nights is where, in the industry, they say they put a show to the graveyard, and that's where. So this might be our last season. It might be kicked off mid-season for a mid-season replacement, which is a bummer because, I mean, you know, I don't watch TV a lot, but this is a good show. I mean, these are good actors. Dennis Quaid, Michael Chiklis, Karen Moss. I like the show. It's really well. But the bottom line is for industry people is numbers. And this is a very expensive show to shoot. It's not a $1 million show they're shooting. This is an expensive TV show to shoot. You got big actors and it's shot in Los Angeles, which is expensive to shoot in L.A. So I can understand where they're coming from, the numbers. But, man, you know, hey, just take it when you get it, man. It comes.
Exactly. So what else is going on? Any other projects you have going on, Tim? I know you want to do the movie. You're waiting on that to happen, right?
Yep. Yeah, just the sequel is going to probably shoot this year because on a sequel like this, you need to get a quick turnaround time on it or you're going to lose your interest. You know what I mean? If you wait, you know, 2-3 years for the sequel to Oz, you lose your flow. So they're fast-tracking that bad boy. So I've been training hard for that, man, because I got to get back up in weight, strongman size, and just letting this beard go crazy again. And in the meantime, just filtering through these offers we're getting and looking at the scripts and seeing who's attached to it and you know, who's making it and where it's going to go and just choose a really good project next. And then working on my own film here at Detroit Riders in Michigan, which is the Sons of Anarchy meets Biker Boys, which we're shooting here in Detroit. And just get this finances secured for that. It's a $5 million film. looks like I'll be getting my distribution through 20th Century Fox, which is great. So we're just trying to tighten that up. Just got a Michigan Film Incentive here, and I'm from Michigan. I want to shoot it here and use some, I got some good actors we're going to be getting LOIs from, which would be great. So if you can, yeah, ask your boy Exhibit, man. I need Exhibit to be on the Biker Boys crew. What's up?
Oh, well, I'll have to ask Exhibit that if we can create the relationship. I'm pretty good at doing that with celebrities, Tim, as you're seeing different people that are friends of mine. And I know your Facebook, you're completely flooded, so you can't really watch my Facebook. You maybe just have to check my news feed to see me with all the different celebrities every day.